Most of us would be pleased to lighten our loads, but not the trucking industry's biggest movers and shakers. They're driving legislation that would effectively raise the weight limit for many of the semis that traverse Indiana's roadways. They say the permit overhaul they favor would boost the state's economy, generate more money for road repairs, and level the playing field for all freight carriers, regardless of their cargo. Critics argue that the proposed changes would wreak havoc on the state's roads and bridges, lead to deadlier crashes, and undermine the rail industry. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll weigh in on the debate. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to talk about what has to be one of the weightiest subjects we've ever tackled here on Indiana Lawmakers are Republican Representative Jim Pressel of Rolling Prairie, first-year chairman of the House Roads and Transportation Committee, Republican Representative Tom Saunders of Louisville, a 25-year member of that panel, Peter Mills, president and chief executive officer of the Indiana Railroad Company, and Kendall Culp of Rensselaer, president of the Jasper County Commissioners and immediate past president of the Indiana Association of County Commissioners. Thank you all for being here. Now, for me, the layman, this is complex. When I was looking at statute and saw a formula, I got scared because I thought I was going to avoid math in this career. But so we may have disagreement during this discussion. I'm guessing we will. But let's see if we can agree on what the existing statute is for people watching and listening. Federal limit right now is 80,000 pounds for a semi or a tractor trailer. Indiana in 2014 authorized the Department of Transportation to issue special permits, exemptions for haulers of certain commodities. For agricultural commodities, instead of 80,000, it would go up to 97,000 limit with a permit. And then for metal, steel, aluminum, it would go up to 120,000. What is on the table, the bill would basically make everything 100, or it would give everybody the opportunity to file for a permit, an exemption to get. See, I told you, it's complicated. Sure. Let me start with you then, Jim Pressel, since this is your bill and you are the chairman of the aforementioned committee. Why is it when I talk about, you know, steel versus farm commodities and different weight limits, why is this like that old brain teaser about which weighs more, you know, a ton of cannonballs or a ton of feathers? What am I missing here?
So, yeah, you know, when I think when it was originally done, it was because of a lot of demand for steel to move faster, dock shortages. Ag was having trouble moving milk is kind of my understanding. Wasn't around for that part of it. But this 1190 would open up to all commodities. And in its current version, it's going to cap the amount of newcomers. So we do like 113,000 of these permits a year just on those commodities.
Why? Just curious, why does it make more sense to raise all of the sectors who might be hauling commodities to that 120,000 pound threshold rather than go back to the pre-2014 threshold, which, because maybe we don't have as much difficulty now getting milk to market or getting steel through the process. Maybe we do, maybe we don't, I don't know. But why not just go back?
Go backwards instead? Yeah. So it actually, that's an interesting question. So if you looked at the 113,000 permits that we issued in single trip permits, and there's a couple different kind of permits. There's an annual permit and there's single trip. So if we were to actually go backwards and to have eliminated the 113,000 single trips, it would have added 50,000 more truck trips to move those existing commodities. So we'd actually be putting more trucks on the road and more wear and tear.
Because one of the things you say your bill would do would actually reduce, and I guess this makes sense, bigger loads, fewer trucks.
It would be fewer trucks, and fewer trucks moving as line haul. So one of the misconceptions I think this has been is this is coming to a town or a city near you. And this is interstate or state highway systems.
Interstates would still be the federal.
That is part of the state highway system.
Unless there is an exemption from the U.S. Department of.
That wouldn't change because that's part of the state highway system. So state highways, interstates, and in order for them to use your local road, you would have to actually permit with that local.
Okay, a special exemption from that. Okay. Thanks for not getting into axles, because everything I had said
we can talk about
with my preamble would have changed based on where the axles are located and how many of them are. So I'm doing the best I can with a subject I didn't necessarily grow up with. Tom Saunders, what's wrong? Would you just as soon roll back to the pre-2014 level?
You know, we started out, I think we permitted the steel rolls. They were having trouble transporting. So we gave them an exemption. Then the next year, somebody else came. I have an 8-year-old granddaughter that every time we get ready to come to Indianapolis, she says, "Oh, Papa, don't get on that semi road." And my concern is about safety. It takes more time for heavier trucks to stop. We've had several fatalities over our way where trucks just ran over cars and took out the entire family. I also have concerns about, we're permitting them on state highway. And I do agree, the permit was $20, if I'm correct. We've raised that to $300 in this bill, which I think is good.
That was removed.
Oh, that was removed. Okay.
Well, the idea was to fund some of the repairs that would be needed, but I guess that was too much of an increase.
The wear and tear.
But my concern is once they take that state highway, they take I-70 to Newcastle, get on State Road 3, go north on 3, then they have to get on County Road 300 to go over to 103 to hit the factory that they need to work on. The counties are not getting any notification that those heavy loads are coming our way and what they're doing to local roads. And so my concern was safety, local road conditions, and really the wear and tear. You hear experts on both sides, like attorneys. You get two different sides. But there are reports of the damage that even the more axles, even though they're spread out, still causes the weight and the wear and tear.
Theoretically, more axles means less damage to the roadways.
Well, that's what one group says, and the other group says no. So it depends
on the group says feathers are heavier than cannonballs, I guess. So I'm back where I started, confused as I was before. All right, so we're getting a sense of this debate. Let's bring the rail sector into this. Now, you have been CEO and president of the Indiana Railroad Company since, I think, 2015.
Yeah, going on 6 years.
So it's the only landscape, regulatory landscape, that you know in that role is the one that was put in place in 2014.
That's correct.
Is it work? I mean, in your world of druthers, do you want to see that continue? A rollback? Something else altogether? An exclusive arrangement made for rail? I'm guessing it's probably your first choice.
If I had the ability to do it, certainly I'd like to roll it back, right? I mean, there's no doubt that we've lost business to heavier trucks. And to me, and I think to my industry, it is simply a matter of economics, right? The laws of economics apply. When you give trucks the ability to handle 120,000 gross weight, which translates into a 50 to 80% increase in the lading weight they can carry, that shifts the competitive balance. And we compete with trucks every day. I mean, as we talked earlier, you know, coal is a traditional market for the railroads. That market is declining. Our long-term survival really depends on our ability to take trucks off the highway with things like to compete head-to-head with trucks. So things like our intermodal product, which has taken 40,000 trucks off I-65 from Chicago. We have the only direct West Coast international service into central Indiana. I'd love to see it rolled back. And by the way, you know, I did testify in some of the earlier as Representative Saunders points out, this just keeps going, right? So first it's steel, then it's ag, then it's logs, then it's milk. And we testified to that effect earlier, that once you start picking winners in the freight transportation market, it's very hard to justify only allowing certain commodities to do that. So this was very predictable. This won't stop it because you'll continue to have these debates around the complexities of the bill. So I don't want to discount the safety issue. I mean, in our industry, safety is an important part of our culture. We always say take the safe course of action. I don't think this is the safe course of action for the state of Indiana, but I'll let, you know, the sheriffs and the chiefs of police make those compelling arguments. So for me, the point I'd like to make is this does pick winners and losers. This picks trucks over rail transport. It's been very difficult for us to compete with these trucks.
Well, to your point about winners and losers, I guess it was probably 2018-19, there was a brick company, I think maybe in Terre Haute or somewhere in the western part of the state, that said how, you know, we're not steel, we're not a farm commodity, but we still have to move our product from point A to point B. Right. How come we're not getting a break? And don't worry, Kendall Culp, we're going to get you in here. Just one more question. You're I've seen you bring up the fact that your 250, give or take, mile network of rail has been largely privately funded. I mean, you've invested in that and created that infrastructure.
Correct.
Versus a publicly financed road network. Do you see a fairness issue there, too?
Yeah, obviously, right? So we've invested, over the last 10 years, $150 million back into our infrastructure and into these truck competitive products.
Whereas, arguably, people who use the roadways through taxation,
trucks
others,
are using
getting
public infrastructure. And you know, factually, today, they're not paying what they should be paying to use the public roadways. The joint study between Purdue and NDOT found in 2014 that they only pay about 80% of what they should pay. That was updated post the diesel tax increase. They only pay about 80% of what they should pay. So they're subsidized today. And I think that anything that we do to allow heavier trucks, more commodities in heavy trucks, just creates a lot of competitive headwinds, and you're picking winners.
I know, Cole, you drove the longest to get here from Rensselaer, and so I thank you for that. I just wanted to, A, give you a chance to decompress and have a big opening act here. How's that for an opening act before we get to your answers? You wear many hats. You're an officer with the State Farm Bureau. You're a farmer. You're a county commissioner. You're immediate past president of an association. And we've seen a lot of associations that say they're neutral because they do have members on both sides, and especially a lot of the county and the city government. So tell us where you are, and maybe in your personal, from personal perspective, and the organizations you represent.
So first of all, from a county commissioner standpoint, we have a lot of responsibilities. But one thing that's really near and dear to us is to maintain our infrastructure within our counties. And so roads and bridges, obviously, that's the big thing. We're thankful that the General Assembly a few years ago found us more road funding through Community Crossings Program was a great example of that. So it's allowed us to improve our local infrastructure a great deal. So we're very protective of that. I mean, I'm in the northwest part of the state, and so we post our roads in the wintertime for weight limits for frost law to protect those roads from being, you know, torn up or damaged from heavy vehicles. That being said, we also know we need economic development. We need to have growth, and we have to have businesses that that can make products and services and move those. Most of those in our area, some is rail, but most of that is truck. So that being said, you know, there's 65,000 miles of county roads in Indiana, plus 20,000 miles of cities and towns roads and streets. So the vast majority are locally operated, locally maintained infrastructure with county with roads and bridges. Of course, the bridges are mostly all controlled by the county. So we have a lot of investment in that, and we just by nature we want to protect that. So there is a concern, obviously, if you allow heavier vehicles on your roads. Now, granted, this bill directs this on state roads, so we understand that. But what could be the next step? So I-65 runs north to south through Jasper County. We're a long county. Just the other day, we had an accident, and they closed the one lane of 65. So all those trucks get off, all those vehicles get off, and so while they're supposed to stay on a state road, especially if it's a marked detour, we all know that we look for shortcuts, and we take the first county road we come to connect to another road. So it becomes an enforcement issue. So that's not allowed, but who is going to pull those over and weigh them and say that they're not in compliance and issue a ticket?
Just curious, and I want to get around, but would Farm Bureau be as enthusiastic? If in fact they weren't already carved out through an exemption, would that, the fact that they would be in the group lumped in with, say, the brick manufacturers, would that shape their perspective on this?
Agriculture has that exemption, obviously. So we really don't have a dog in this fight, so to speak, because the exemption is already there. And that's utilized. But you have to remember, that's a very seasonal use. You know, farmers during fall, during harvest, that's when we're on the roads with those trucks. So it's for a very short period of time.
Of course, it would go from 97. I guess the good news, from your perspective, would go from 97,000 limit to 120. All right, so you've heard some of the complaints, Jim Pressel, about... Yeah. And we can take them, lump them together, or take them one at a time. The damage, perhaps, the extra wear and tear on roads, including potentially non-state sure. roads. Sure. And then the safety issue. How sure. would you address so, this?
You know, I think it's interesting, and what I hear, no offense to everybody here, but you're talking about big trucks in general, right? So to the accident, to Kendall's point about the accident, we have to get off, we have to reroute, and we're going down the county road. Isn't that all big trucks? Isn't that 80,000 pounds? So you're still going to have that wear and tear there in those instances.
But now the money that some of the money that was there in the permitting process, yeah. that increased from $20, $25 up to $300, that's gone. So where does the money come from to repair?
Well, no, I'm saying just in an incident where there's an accident on 65 and now everybody's being diverted out through the county, so, right? Okay. So but, they would technically be overweight on those county roads at 80,000 pounds.
And yet this is your concern, though, I think. Well, you have the two concerns, Tom Saunders, again, that as your granddaughter suggested, the truck road is maybe not safe. And obviously sure. gravity being gravity, a bigger truck might take longer to stop and might have a bit greater...
Now, I don't know that anybody would argue that point, but what I think is really interesting is collecting the data. So a lot of this that I've worked on has been data-driven. So I mentioned the 113,000 trip permits that we did in 2019, and I always go back to 2019 because 2020 numbers were really low, but it was because of the first quarter. So in 2019, through the motor carriers, the Indiana State Police, there were 165 accidents on permitted trucks, and it's a very wide net. There, the inclusion is overweight, over height, over length. So out of all those groups and 113,000 trips, which would be a little over 14 million miles, there was 165 property damage claims, zero fatalities, three injuries.
Tom Saunders addressed that.
And I looked at some documentation last night, and some of that agrees with that, and then some of it doesn't. It's just... It takes more time for those trucks to stop. And as an example, last summer, I-70 was under construction in my district. US 40, we got two good roads running through east, you know, east and west. But I just watched all those trucks get off the road and onto the camera. And I was working on a house on US 40, and an overheight truck came by and hit a cable wire, which almost took the guy's head off that was working with me. So, and that was probably never reported. So I'm sure there's accidents out there that are not reported. And up to your statement, yeah, the heavy trucks are on county roads, but when we put heavier trucks on, that just tears it up. So,
well, and it's minimal. So the amount of the increase is 8,500. To what we're doing right now. So if we do nothing, if this bill dies, the amounts, and you can see the trends in the amount of permits that we issue every year for three commodities, continues to grow.
And just to show you how confusing this is in terms of how the alliances, we were joking or commenting earlier about counties and towns and their associations, even within the trucking industry, the Motor Truck Association is very much enthusiastic about this, but the independent owners and operators are not. They're concerned about it.
Yeah, right, because during our hearing, there was a gentleman came up independent and testified, and after it was over, I walked over and thanked him for coming, and he said, you're the only person that's come over, and you know, so they're split on the issue also.
Peter Mills, what's, as you go about lobbying on this, I know you testified earlier in the process, what is the most potent, a couple of things have come up, the road wear and tear and the safety. What is you talk to lawmakers and you buttonhole them and say, this is why this is not necessarily... a good idea. What do you think really resonates?
Well, I think the safety issue resonates, and I mean, again, I'm not an expert on safety, but to me, again, it's simple laws of physics. A heavier object, you know, an 80,000-pound object, God forbid, colliding with a car does less damage than a 120,000-pound object. So we can talk about frequency or likelihood that the heavy truck will get in an accident, but I think when they do, again, this is a testimony I've seen, obviously, it's going to cause more damage. So that's one issue. And I think the other thing that resonates with people is that, you know, the chairman talked about how many trucks have been taken off the road with the issuance of these permits. Well, I would say that some of it was taken off the rails. And I think that more big trucks doesn't mean fewer trucks. It means more trucks because they will be a modal shift. It's simple economic law.
And can your industry survive this the passage and enactment of the statute?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you we're not going to survive, but I think it will be problematic, right? We make long-term investments in our infrastructure, and we rely on a stable, predictable regulatory environment to do that. I mean, we're buying things that last 40 years, 50 years, 30 years. So I think what you'll see happen as we're starved of oh, no, by the way, the rail industry is one of the most capital intensive industries, period, right? We spend, short lines spend about 30% of every revenue dollar back into their infrastructure, rolling stock, and new products and facilities. Now, you know, class one's 20%. So it ranks across all industries as one of the most capital intensive industries. So as you see rails lose business to truck, our ability to make those long-term investments will certainly be hindered, right? And I think we'll have some tough decisions to make. And I think long-term, you'll have a smaller rail network in the state of Indiana.
Kendall Culp, are you worried that we've heard some suggestions that sooner or later we'll see these trucks, if not initially, certainly later on you're in Rensselaer in Jasper County. Are you worried that 18-wheelers are going to be hauling down on Main Street, if there is a Main Street? I presume every town has a Main Street. How serious is that concern?
Well, they already are. Our Main Street happens to be a state highway and a U.S. highway.
I knew that. I was just quizzing
so
you on
there
that.
You go. Yeah. but certainly, and if they stay where they're supposed to be, if everything goes fine, they're on state and interstates and state highways, it's not a problem, because that's what this bill addresses. It's just the fact that if they get off, or if that opens the gate for, basically we're going to go anywhere, because there's not the enforcement. The other part of this are the bridges, the 13,000 bridges that are in Indiana that are maintained by local units of government. Those all have to be posted every 2 years. You have an inspection program, and in our county, Jasper County has the least number of posted bridges of any county in Indiana, because we've invested over the decades in that infrastructure. So while we've made that investment, we want to protect that investment. Now, they're there for use. Their use, whatever legally limits they're allowed to have, they're open to anybody to use, and that needs to continue. But we need to make sure that we're protecting that infrastructure, because we want it to be maintained and to be used. And again, if you look at larger trucks with more axles, so that's more square inches of rubber on the road. That spreads that weight out. I mean, there are studies that the agricultural industry has that are out there now that says the more you can distribute that weight on rubber on the asphalt, the easier, the better it is, the safer it is on the road, and not to destruct the road. So I think we need to look at that on that side too. Is there is a positive to having more axles on the truck, so you can distribute that heavy load more evenly, and you have less damage. So it's not all a negative. I think we need to make sure we're looking at both sides. But bottom line, I don't think counties are going to have an issue with this as long as trucks stay on state highways. It's those instances where they have to get off the state highways that we're concerned about.
And how do you enforce that? I've seen anecdotally there have been trucks that do venture onto roads that they shouldn't be on. And I think it was a year or so ago, somebody found one that was 100,000 pounds over the limit. I mean, I'm surprised that it even would chug along, but
I'm sure we didn't permit that.
No, that was not permitted. Fear not, that was not wood chips
or steel.
But I mean, is that another issue, or do you even attempt to deal with that part of this?
No, I think it's a valid point, right? So how do you address where even the 80,000 pound trucks may go? How do you? It's through an enforcement mechanism, and that's got to be done at the local level. So, with the heavier trucks, the permitted trucks, even with more axles, getting into the local the local roads, we'll say, getting to that manufacturer. So I think it's also interesting to point out, or needs to be pointed out, is that we route these trucks. You just don't get to go where you want.
It's part of the permitting process.
It is part of the permitting process. And I think it went live February 8th. We've through Department of Revenue and NDOT, we've collectively come up with a really good piece of software where this is done all online, and the routing is there up to where they get off.
Very quickly, because we don't have weight limits, but we have time limits, and I'm told we're out of time.
Up until they get on a local road, and that's what we need to work out.
And that's the big key. So yeah. We will see where this bill goes, and if it's enacted, we'll see where it leads us. If it's not, I'm guessing it might come up again in a future session, since you've had it a few times before. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Jim Pressel of Rolling Prairie, Republican Representative Tom Saunders of Louisville, Peter Mills of the Indiana Railroad Company, and Jasper County Commissioner Kendall Culp, also of the Indiana Association of County Commissioners. Thank you all for being here and sharing your insights. As we enter the home stretch of this legislative session, we turn to the matter of money. We'll be talking budget on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Well, Ed, we talked about rail lines. We talked about roadways. We can't leave aviation out of this. Give us the 30 or 40,000 foot perspective on this issue.
So I guess now we're the cross clouds of America, in addition to being the crossroads. But that's really a good place to start, because Indiana is a major logistics hub in all senses of the word. And we've got the FedEx mini hub at the Indianapolis airport, the UPS mini hub there as well. And those entities, you know, work with the trucking and the rail industry with their transmodal forms of transportation and logistics. So, yeah, actually, Indiana is very economically involved in the whole logistics industry. And this bill, this whole issue makes sense from that perspective. But you know, we're dealing with, to a certain extent, the questions of emotion and public safety against the economics of the situation. And when you deal with economics, you also have to look at the subsidies. And you heard the rail people talk about how they have to reinvest their own money in their business. And at the same time, you know, we're seeing the taxpayers actually subsidize the trucking industry through what we pay in taxes for our state highways and local roads.
Do you think this legislation, whether it prevails or fails, has any chance of changing our status as a crossroads of America?
Well, in the short run, we're seeing big supply chain disruptions after the pandemic, and certainly, you know, the ability to increase the transportation capacity of the state is very important, particularly to the automotive industry at this point. So, yes, that could be advantageous. But you also heard the panelists essentially be a little bit conflicted on everything. You know, when you heard phrases like, well, at the same time, and that being said, and no offense to my other panelists. So, you know, there really are two sides on this particular issue.
And do Hoosiers, I mean, every motorists are certainly affected by it. Do Hoosiers really get that this is a significant issue, regardless of where you are on the debate?
Well, I think they understand the emotions of it. I'm not so sure that they're as well versed in the economics of it and the timeliness of the economic perspective, again, with respect to inventory shortages and supply chain disruptions.
Well, I think
at least we don't have a Suez Canal.
That's right. No blockage of White River or the Wabash. We could be thankful for that. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight. Look forward to talking to you next week. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit wfyi.org for more Statehouse news. Until next week, take care.